If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Hey everybody, welcome into the Cubs Talk Podcast. I'm Tony Andracki, joined by producer Jeff Nelson, digital producer and multimedia jack of all trades, I guess, Scott Shagnon. And then Patrick Mooney is down in Arizona, boots on the ground. The first thing we want to get to today is kind of the most compelling storyline that may come out of all spring training so far, but the Miguel Montero, Joe Maddon clash, so to speak, the friction and tension between the two of them. Pat, you were there, I know, this week as both of them talked about it. What is it that you heard and picked up from both of those guys?
Yeah, Tony, it's kind of a big bowl of awkward. It's a nice spring training storyline. For us, I think ultimately, you know, Joe and Miguel can work together and kind of get beyond those issues. I just think it's more of a larger point, like I wrote this week, that Montero wasn't necessarily or exclusively complaining about his role and the way he was used. You know, he felt like he was sticking up for his teammates and having their back and kind of giving voice to some of the behind-the-scenes frustrations in terms of the way Maddon managed games and used his bullpens and kind of, you know, rode certain players while marginalizing others. Obviously, it didn't stop the Cubs from winning the World Series, and they're, you know, going to be odds-on favorites probably to do it again this year. But just an interesting kind of insight into some of the clubhouse dynamics at a time when, you know, everything should be, you know, blue skies and sunshine here in Arizona. It was kind of interesting to hear Maddon get to camp and say, yeah, you know, Miggy and I talked at Cubs convention, and then the next morning having Montero say, no, we haven't talked yet. So a little bit of he said, he said, but still I think kind of a bigger picture issue that we might, you know, see pop up again if, you know, certain players get a little more established. You know, I think even when you win the World Series, something no Cubs manager has done in more than 100 years, you're still going to get second guessed and still feel some heat.
But, Patrick, I'm guessing that Miguel has to see the writing on the wall. I mean, he's a guy in the last year of a big contract. Wilson Contreras is obviously the catcher in waiting. The Cubs have a couple of young prospects, but as a backup catcher, he's got to see that. And if this thing goes down between a battle between the two, he's going to lose, and Joe's going to be the one moving forward with this. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I mean, Montero is a brutally honest person. You know, he calls it like he sees it. And you know, he's seen the writing on the wall. You know, he thought he was going to come here and be the everyday guy. I mean, he's certainly an accomplished player, a two-time All-Star. And, you know, the Cubs made, you know, that deal at the winter meetings in 2014, and it was kind of a signal of the Cubs getting serious about winning, and then they, you know, sign John Lester and become the talk of those winter meetings at San Diego. And, you know, the Cubs at the time had kind of David Ross in their back pocket, and I don't think anyone really expected him to become this larger-than-life character and someone who'd go down in Cubs lore forever. And so whether it was Wellington Castillo kind of on his way out or Wilson Contreras on his way up, Montero has been stuck in these kind of awkward three catcher rotations that he didn't really see coming. But, you know, to his credit, he stayed ready, came up with some just huge hits during the postseason. And as Madden, you know, rightly pointed out, that he helped Chapman get through the ninth inning after that blown save in Cleveland. So I think either way, this is not the last we've heard from Miguel Montero.
Patrick, real quick, this is Scott. I edited a video for this, for your story yesterday, and I could tell a lot of body language with Miguel talking about, hey, you know, with the three catchers last year, it was hard to really get in a rhythm in a routine when he's only going once or twice a week. And now it's obviously he's a second catcher, but what's the dynamic with Schwarber? Have you heard anything more with him and the catching possibilities for his third string catcher?
Yeah, that's a good point, Scott. That I forgot to mention that Montero's always been very willing to mentor Contreras and share information. That really bothered him when he came up with the Diamondbacks. You know, he felt like that clubhouse was pretty territorial and not as welcoming to young talent as the Cubs have become. And Schwarber at this point has been medically cleared to, you know, go through catching drills this spring, but Theo was adamant in saying that it will be 1 or 2 days a week, and that the Cubs really see this as more of an emergency role or extraordinary circumstances to where Kyle Schwarber would be catching. It's this kind of delicate balance with Schwarber. They know this guy would run through a brick wall at any second, and that's kind of why they still entertain this idea and played along with him being a catcher. But, you know, with that intensity comes, you know, a lot of risk. If this is a guy that's going to hit 30, 35, 40 homers and be one of the most dangerous hitters in your lineup, can you really expose him to those the rigors of catching, even though he did obviously get injured playing the outfield last year? So they're going to, you know, keep this experiment going. They'll see where it goes, but Wilson Contreras is clearly their opening day catcher in 2017 and the man behind the plate they hope for years to come.
Pat, let's kind of switch gears a bit to the other side of the battery. The other big news this week, I guess it's not really news, but Jake Arrieta, besides mooning you guys, the media down there in Arizona with his tattoo, he also talked about his contract situation. And, you know, I love the way you phrased it. The Cubs and he will make sure that it's not a distraction this year in your story. But, you know, how does Jake do that? How does he make sure that it's not a distraction? He has this kind of innate ability to keep the focus on his performance on the field. But will he really be able to sustain that for the rest of 2017 with free agency looming?
Well, Tony, there are things that you can never unsee, and one of those is a Coastal Carolina tattoo on Jake Arrieta. Arrieta's right butt cheek. So this is a guy who clearly is pretty confident in himself and his abilities. He said he's being honest, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, the way that you said it. It wasn't like earth-shattering news here. And, you know, I think certain outlets frame it as Arrieta open to an extension, whereas I think we took it as kind of this countdown towards free agency. And I think Jake is in a pretty good place mentally. He got a huge payday last year. He's making almost $16 million this year. And I think for both sides, it makes a lot of sense to just play it out. You know, if Jake does have that monster year and some desperate team gives him that, you know, 6 or 7 year mega deal, I think the Cubs would probably say, thank you for everything, Jake. It's been more than we ever could have expected when we made that trade. Good luck. You'll always be a Cub. You know, see you at the 10-year reunion. But, you know, what if you know, he does get hurt or if he has a down year. And I think this winter once again shows how unpredictable the free agent process can be. And, you know, Jake does have a measure of leverage if the Cubs don't trade for a frontline starting pitcher at the deadline. And if, you know, none of these pitching prospects emerge this year and take steps forward, you know, all of a sudden the Cubs could be in a little bit of a scramble mode to find you know, that guy to plug into their rotation. So, you know, there's no, Jake, I think, used the phrase open, there's an open dialogue, but there's really more of an open door, I think, is what he meant, because the Cubs have no ongoing talks with the Boris camp, and there's nothing scheduled on the docket at this point. So I think, like I said, both sides are willing to just kind of play it out and see where they wind up next winter.
Is he the type of guy who would consider taking another hometown discount, if, especially maybe if the Cubs do happen to win a second World Series? Now you got two World Series. Maybe then do you go for the money, or do you have something to prove and want to say, okay, we missed out in 2017. Maybe I'll come back and try to finish what we started here the last couple years.
And, yeah, I mean, we're looking at the video yesterday. He also mentioned that money really isn't an issue right now as he's getting in. Is that correct from what he said?
Well, I think, you know, when you get in these situations, I think, Jake, everyone says it's not about the money, but, you know, this is an extremely competitive guy who rightly has a very high opinion of his game. And, you know, it's easy to say now it's not about the money, but, you know, I think the Cubs certainly would have to be pretty competitive. And, I mean, having said that, Jake knows he has it pretty good here, that this pitching infrastructure kind of rescued his career, you know, at a, you know, not long after he thought about just quitting baseball and, you know, taking like a corporate job and, you know, kind of moving back to Texas with his family. So it's really complicated. It's hard to project now, you know, before the position players even report here. I think that, you know, the Cubs will have a good a shot as anyone. They'll have as strong a recruiting pitch as anyone. I think it'll just come down to, you know, how hard Arrieta wants to push it in the open market and really how much of an appetite Theo's front office is going to have for the type of long-term big money commitment it's going to take. And, you know, is there an element of either confidence / arrogance of, you know, we found a Jake Arrieta and maybe we'll try and find the next one, as, you know, difficult as that could be.
Sounds good, Pat. Thanks for the knowledge. We'll let you get back to the team there in Arizona.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Enjoy the weather.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here on the podcast and come back, and the three of us here in Chicago will keep discussing Cubs news out of spring training.
CSN Sports Talk Live podcast brings you the freshest takes and boldest insights on the hottest topics of the day.
David Kaplan leads the conversation with a rotating panel of writers, reporters, and personalities.
Don't miss a single episode. Subscribe at csnchicago.com/podcasts today.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Cubs Talk Podcast. I'm Tony Andracki here with CSN producer Jeff Nelson. Hello. And Scotty Chagnon. And we're gonna keep talking about the top news items to keep an eye on from Arizona in spring training. And we just talked to Patrick Mooney, who I like that I appreciate that he told us that it was Jake Arrieta's right butt
yes,
cheek.
Yes, right one.
That has the tattoo. That's details.
It's a
that
lower
you don't
body
know.
Tattoo and not an upper body tattoo.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so yes.
Hockey terms.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the knowledge that only you only get in this podcast right here, or I guess you could probably find on Twitter. But you know, the most interesting thing that we heard was the whole Miguel Montero, Joe Maddon clash, and that's something that I think is going to kind of prevail throughout spring training and definitely throughout the season, because right now, you know, neither guy is going anywhere.
And it's possible neither guy's going, you know, Madden's not leaving anytime soon anyways. But Miguel Montero is probably going to play out this contract and go through the rest of the year. So how do these two kind of coexist and this team that doesn't have much other drama besides that?
Yeah, Joe, I think he's going to find a way. That's just kind of what he does. He always finds a way to take the spotlight whenever something's going bad. Couple years ago, the Cubs are on a 5-game losing streak. All of a sudden, hey, let's bring in some Penguins. Now, all of a sudden, everybody in the media is following Penguins around, and they're not asking about losing.
The bad stuff.
Exactly. Focus, get this, the spotlight off of the bad things onto the good. He's the guy who just seems like he'll be able to find a way to work with pretty much anybody. He's kind of like the ultimate boss that you'd want. He'll be able to come in, sit down. He'll tell you what he wants from you. He tells you what he expects from you, and that's it. I can't believe, and I'm really shocked that it's gone this far that they haven't sat down and talked, because that just does not seem like the Joe Madden way.
And like looking at the video yesterday, cutting this for Patrick's story, like I said, there's a lot of body language I looked at in Montero compared to Madden. Madden kind of swept it under the rug. Oh, you know, he's, you know, it's just the way things are almost. And Montero, at the same time, he's not like, he's obviously upset that he's not the starting catcher, but he understands right now that's his role. He's not happy about it, but he's going to go ahead and do what he has to do to get through that. You can tell he's frustrated, but at the same time, he's willing to do what he has to do to keep proving himself. And like you said, like with Ross last year and with Contreras, it was hard to get himself in a rhythm during the middle of the season when he's only catching twice a week, if that. And I kind of listened to that as like, hey, I mean, he has a point. A little bit.
This is no way what he expected when he came here.
Sure, exactly. That's what he was saying.
He was going to be the guy, and I'll say, I mean, like Patrick said, who would have thought David Ross become the folk hero that he was?
Yeah.
And it's the great story.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, obviously, young catchers are always going to come up, and Wilson Contreras comes up and homers in his first swing at the plate. And obviously, the future moved a lot faster than anybody could ever expect to be on the plate.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, too, in Montero saying that, Scotty, I agree with you, he has a point. You know, we can see his side. It doesn't take much to you know, feel empathetic towards him and his plight. You know, he was a guy that was a leader. He still is a leader in that clubhouse. You know, two-time All-Star, I think, in the past. And here he was, only 12 at-bats throughout the whole postseason run. So I get it. But at the same time, do you guys think that says anything about Madden, that he has yet to talk to Miguel Montero, according to Montero's words? We don't know exactly what's gone on, but Madden has said that the two of them talked at Cubs convention. Montero flat out said to all the media that no, they haven't spoken yet. Do you think that that's something, is that a knock on Madden? Does that say something about this situation? Why the disconnect between the two?
I mean, I'm not sure if it's one of those things where it's Madden saw him at Cubs convention and said like a brief, hey, how's it going? Nothing.
And he
long.
Considers that, hey, I,
and he
yeah,
said,
yeah,
he considers
yeah,
that
we talked,
we talked. And it seemed like it was cheerful. It wasn't like, hey, let's go over here in the corner and talk for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? So maybe that's what Madden's talking about. Like, yeah, we saw each other for a brief
minute
with the whole team.
Yeah, said hi.
And say, hey, how's it going? How's the family? Whatever.
Where Miggy is looking
where
for
Miggy's
him,
like, did
down.
You guys talk for, you know, 15 minutes about your role? Probably not. You know?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm just shocked that it just does not seem like Joe Madden to let something get this far in the media. I would have thought it would have been a call to Miggy the day after the parade, after this comes out, and just
or
hey,
after he talked on the radio. And even Madden said he wants his players to speak out. I mean, that's what he said in his press conference the other day.
Yeah, and he always has said that, and that's who he is. He's very secure in his position, in himself, in his managing style, and his decisions. Really, the only time that we've seen even a little bit of a crack in that security and that mold is after, you know, the World Series, after everybody kind of criticized. Basically, it was just the Chapman thing that is the only cracks we've seen, you know, in that kind of Madden, larger-than-life type of persona. But I am curious what it's like in the clubhouse. I find it really interesting what Montero said about how he's speaking up for teammates, because the comments he said when he first hopped on the radio show back, you know, in whatever that was, November, he only talked about himself back then. And now, several months later, he's saying that he's talking about for teammates. So to me, that makes me question. I'm not sure, you know, what's going on here. Is there more at play? Was there more at play before? And Montero didn't correctly explain that on the radio show? Or is he maybe trying to save face a little bit right now? Or is it just, you know, like maybe something's lost in translation? Because to be honest, I was not on that radio show. You know, I wasn't down in Arizona. I don't know the sequence and cadence of questions and events So just looking at his quotes, it seems curious.
It does, but you look at it in the time, when you're winning and all that stuff, you're not going to worry. If I'm part of a winning team and we're 30 games over 500, we're in states, and I'm playing once a week but we're winning, I'm good with that. I would hope that most of the guys on the team would be. It's the point, if you get a point where a few months later, hey, wait a sec, I guess I could have been in playing in this game and that, but maybe then you start the second guessing, and then maybe that's when the gremlin starts.
And then he gets in the playoffs, and whenever he is in, he's doing good stuff, and then he's back on the bench, and that's where I think the fire burns inside him.
Yeah, the guy hits.
Hey, I'm doing my job. Why can't I be out there more?
It's the big home run and
thing,
and then gets the base hit, the deciding factor in Game 7. So,
and just jumping off of strictly the Montero situation, I mean, Roldis Chapman talked this week and did not walk, but he had a chance to walk back his comments and Madden, you know, about how Madden used him. Madden said maybe a little bit was lost in translation, literally there. But Chapman had the opportunity to walk back those comments, did not, basically doubled down on them. And now here we are in almost March, and the Cubs have finally won the World Series, and Madden was the guy that got them there. He was. He deserves all the credit in the world for that. So is the second-guessing ever going to stop?
It's baseball. That's what you do. You have so much downtime between plays, let alone games.
You're right.
That's what you do is you second-guess. Joe will know more about baseball and forget more about baseball than I'll ever know. My only issue, and I think he admits this, was throwing Chapman back out in game six in the ninth inning. Cubs got that big lead right away, and all of a sudden, Joe's out. At some point, he could have had somebody up throwing just to save a bull or two, because you brought Chapman in to win your World Series. You needed him in game five, and you rode him in game five just to get to game six. Now, you put him in game six because you had to win that one, too. Suddenly, he got a big lead, but he didn't have anybody up in the bullpen throwing. That was the only issue, and he went out again. That saved 10 pitches, and then going to get into his decision of bringing in Lester and Chapman in Game 7.
Do you think Madden, in the back of his head, knew that they wouldn't be bringing Chapman back? And
Absolutely.
With this guy until the wheels fall.
Until the car runs out of gas, we're going to go with it.
We paid all this money. We made those trades to get him. Let's use as much of him as we can. But then at the same time, it's like it's Game 7, he brings him in, and it's...
To be honest, piggybacking that point is, I think Madden would have done that with anybody, even if it wasn't a guy like Chapman who was, pretty much guaranteed to be leaving town.
So like Wayne Davis come
over. Right, or like we saw him do that with John Lester. I mean, at that point, with all the history on the line and you're playing just to get down to those last couple games, I totally agree with Madden on that, and I don't think there's no way that that's wrong. I mean, you're going to ride every guy you have, even if that meant Jake Arrieta was talking about willing to go out and pitch again, and he just threw in game six, So, like, they were ready to go. Every single one of those guys was going to tear their body to shreds to try to win that championship, and Madden was going to let him. And at that time, because of Rondon's injury, Strope's injury, Chapman was the one guy that he could really lean on. So I do get it. But I am curious, is this the last we hear of an Aroldis Chapman question to Joe Madden?
Probably not, because history will always follow people around. I mean, you look at Dusty Baker, his reputation now, what are people going to say? Oh, he works his pitchers too hard.
Yeah.
And from now on, whenever a pitcher pitches for Dusty, they're always going to be looking at the pitch count and worried about Pryor and Wood, saying, is he going to work them too hard? And at that point, looking back in 2003, Cubs bullpen was not what it was back in 2016. Dusty had to do it to get that far.
Yeah.
So that's just until he gets in a situation where he can prove otherwise, I think it's going to follow him around.
I will say this, though. If the only drama right now is the backup catcher.
We got the fifth starter, too.
Okay, fifth starter. I mean, the hardcore.
But yes,
the biggest
right.
news story out of is Montero. But if that's the big news out of camp right now,
It's a good camp.
It's a good camp so far.
Yeah.
I'm curious, do you guys think as well that all this second guessing is going on? I mean, here we are in the media talking about it. Fans have talked about it. Talk radio has probably discussed almost nothing since, November. But do you think there's any of that second guessing in the clubhouse besides Montero, who, like Pat said, is so brutally honest that we see this and he is not afraid to speak up about it? But I'm sure there are a lot of other guys that don't have that same kind of honesty and forwardness about it. So do you think there's any of those questions that are prevailing within the clubhouse? Because, we've seen Madden clash with Jason Hamill, and now Hamill's in Kansas City, and, there were a bunch of different factors, and the Cubs did Hamill a favor for that. But that's always something that, I think we'll see is Those two guys had a long history, and then they clashed a lot in 2 years based on when Madden felt like he should take Hamill out and not. You know, the Chapman thing, the Miguel Montero, if there was a lack of communication, do you think there's any sort of questioning or second-guessing prevailing in the Cubs clubhouse right now from the players?
I would think that I would hope not, just because I think the ultimate thing is Joe's doing what he has to do to get the Cubs to win not only that game, but the series, the World Series, get to the playoffs. I would think a lot of players would look in and say, look, they realize, okay, we needed Chapman to go that far. That's it. I mean, if he was our best option to throw 100 pitches that night and that's going to get us the win, I trust Joe.
Yeah, and it was like deja vu all year last year. Every time he talked to the media in pregame, I'm just worried about today. That's all I'm worried about, and I got to do what I got to do to win that game that day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that I don't know. I think the second guessing can happen in any team.
It can happen in any job in the world.
So I think, you know, any major league team is going to have the same thing. I don't think it's as much as like fans and the media has as far as what their perception is, but I think the players just go out and they're focusing on them on their own game, getting out of slumps or getting whatever goals they have in mind personally, as well as getting the team wins.
And it's funny too, I mean, we've focused so much on this second guessing of Madden, and they won. Imagine what this would be like if they lost.
Oh, Rick Renneri would be the best manager in the city of Chicago right now.
Yeah.
I just could not imagine if that would have happened.
I'm not sure, quite honestly,
And how much more pressure they would have this year.
Right.
Yes. Oh, to get that close and, yes.
And would they have recovered, really, like, ultimately? I mean, Madden, he would have been facing questions about this into, like, July. Yeah. And, you know, as it is, he might be facing questions.
Yeah, as it is.
There might be people still talking about it. I really hope not. But
I mean, they should be in the playoffs again. Once that comes, like, he's going to be – those questions will come back again. Yep. I'm sure they'll die off in summer and more stuff will come out. But
yeah,
once playoffs time, it's going to be like,
are
you
going to go with Wade Davis the whole time?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take another quick break here and come back with the third segment and talk a little bit about Hector Rondon and Kyle Schwarber.
It's sports, it's social, it's viral.
It's Luke Stuckmeyer and Layla Rahimi, and it's the Next Generation Sports Show.
In the Loop, every night at 6:30, 10, and 10:30 on CSN Chicago.
And as soon as the show ends, turn to Facebook Live for the after show.
All right, welcome back to the Cubs Talk podcast, and let's piggyback off of all the bullpen talk that we were discussing, but this time let's not second-guess Madden or anybody else, and instead talk about Hector Rondon, who he missed most of the last month or so of the regular season with a triceps issue. Really the last like 6 to 7 weeks of the season were hampered with that issue. Then in the playoffs, he just wasn't the same. His slider was very flat because of the arm issues. Now in spring, he comes back. He's said to be fully healthy, and he's going to get a chance to pitch in the World Baseball Classic as well. What do you guys make of that? I don't think there's a connection there. I mean, there's no reason that a triceps issue should prevail into now in March.
No, it should be that far away. But my only worry would be that he's away from Chris Bosio and the trainers that he worked with all season long and for the past couple years. If they may, if for some unknown reason that there's an issue and it carried over, maybe the trainers who see him all the time would pick up something, if an arm slot or velocity would pick up on something before it became disastrous. That said, it shouldn't be a problem. It's good to get high-pressure situations, sure, as high-pressure as the World Baseball Classic can get, but it's good to see you out there to do that, and obviously hope he does.
I mean, that's what I was going to mention. Like, if anything, it's just getting him back in the competitive mindset a little bit quicker than some of the other relievers and the Cubs down in spring training. And even though they're playing games, it's not as intense as the World Baseball Classic will end up being. He's playing for his country, and there's always pride in that. So.
Yeah.
And that's a silver lining. It's a good point, Scotty, is that he's going to get back into that competitive spirit and everything right away. And historically, it's a little bit easier for relief pitchers to work up to regular season, fine-tuning everything, just because they only have to throw one or two innings. So for Rondon, that'll be nice, given that he hasn't pitched in a lot of big outings or hasn't gotten a ton of game experience because he wasn't used much at the end of the regular season and in the postseason as well. So I think it'll be really cool for him, and I think it'll be good for him to build his confidence back up, because the Cubs are going to absolutely need him in 2017.
Yes.
There's going to be times where Wade Davis, you know, he's coming off an elbow strain, like forearm issue as well from 2016. So Hector Rendon is going to have to pitch the ninth inning in some games. And even without that, he's going to have to pitch a bunch of huge innings, get a bunch of outs. So I think this is nothing but good.
Yeah, I would like to see maybe Joe go back to the situation where Lou Piniella did back when Carlos Marmol came up before Carlos Marmol became the punchline, was that he would bring in Marmol in the bottom of the fifth if the Cubs were up by one and the opposing team had the bases loaded, nobody out. Let's bring in Marmol. Let's shut this game down before it gets out of hand. I mean, it's safe situations. The saves are all nice and all that, but sometimes the games are decided a lot earlier. And if you put a guy in like Rendon to put out a fire in the fifth inning, suddenly your sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth become a lot easier.
And losing a guy like Travis Wood to the Royals, which, great for him, he's going to have the opportunity to start over there.
Yeah.
He's out. He was the guy that could do it all with the bat, with going in the outfield, going in the back to the mound. It's crazy.
Remember when he was our best pinch hitter for a while?
Oh, yeah.
The Swain era. Oh, we got Travis Wood on the bench. Come on, we'll be good.
And just his personality in the locker room is gone. So I think having him gone, it's going to be interesting to see how he comes in and fills that middle inning gap that the Cubs will need to be successful.
Of course, I'm sure they're also hoping on Carl Edwards Jr. I mean, this is the guy that they're putting
That's
in. Maybe
another.
They're trying to groom him. Maybe Davis is a one and done, and suddenly either drop Edwards in the ninth or Edwards in the seventh, move Strope and Rendon back.
Yeah.
I think that he's the guy that they're trying
and
to
Tony,
groom.
You talked to Carl at the convention. What are your thoughts on him coming forward this new year?
I think he still wants to be a starter. I mean, most guys will at this point. Justin Grimm still talks about wanting to be a starter, and it's been like 5 years since he actually was. So that's what they were used to. That's what they came up playing, you know, high school baseball, or these guys that went to college, most of them were starters and then in the minors and everything. So I totally get it. But that's the one guy I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Madden would have ridden any arm into the ground that he had. Well, except Carl Edwards Jr.
Yes.
Because they think he's the shining star in the bullpen. And I think they're right. I mean, he has a cutter that I'm not going to compare to Mariano Rivera, but he's watching tape of Rivera because he has a cutter. Like, there's a correlation there. And, you know, we've seen it. Edwards has nasty stuff. We saw it even when he was unable to get out. It's just more about experience for this kid. And he's really only spent a little over a half a season in the big leagues, which seems crazy. It feels like he's been around for a lot longer.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what Edwards is going to bring this year. That being said, I don't think he's going to be a multi-inning guy this year. I think they're going to be, you know, 3-4 hitters for him and done throughout the course of this year. Maybe cap, not necessarily cap his innings, but try to keep him around the 60-ish threshold in 2017 and then try to keep him fresh for October too. With the rest of the bullpen and how things play out, Scotty, I liked your point about Travis Wood and who's going to fill that role. I think that's the most interesting part is that long relief role, figuring out when Jason Hamill went down on, like, Memorial Day and he had those cramps and he got removed in the second inning, it was Travis Wood who came out and pitched four perfect innings of relief. He's the guy with, like, the rubber arm, you know, could go out there at you know, one moment and go from there. And right now I don't see anybody in this bullpen that can do that. Now, granted, we still have to figure out who the fifth starter is going to be. You got Brett Anderson
and
Mike
Montgomery. If Anderson's healthy, that's the issue. I think if Anderson is healthy, eventually he would be the guy, and Montgomery would be the perfect guy to become the 2017 Travis Wood going back. But at this point, I don't think, and based on Anderson's history, I don't think he can count on that. And, who's going to be – I mean, the Cubs' biggest issue is who's going to be the sixth starter. It's good.
And that's
problems.
I think – and it's important to have one of those six guys.
Absolutely,
I mean, especially with how long they went through November 2nd. I mean – unlike all these other teams that were done early, like, the Cubs' arms need to be rested going into the 2017 season. And if you're going with five starters, it's going to be interesting to see if they can try and get back to November or late October.
Well, he said they want to go to six, but there's really no – there's so many days off in April that
true. It's going to help.
And that's going to help, and there's always going to be a rain out or two in April, just weather-wise, that everything's going to get spread out.
Hopefully not snow.
Come June and July, that's probably when the game starts stacking up, and I think that's probably when – hopefully, if everybody's healthy, Joe can figure out a way to go to a six-man for a while and then go back to five and just kind of feel out the schedule the way it is.
Yeah, and that's where the Cubs really had their only hiccup all year was that right before the All-Star break in the end of June and July, like you mentioned, Jeff, where they had 24 games in 24 days. Everybody felt tired.
That was the whole – Joe, I mean, that was one of the few times you never really hear players make an excuse, I'm tired, but – they were right. That was middle of the summer, and it just became the grind. The grind hit early.
Yep.
And they just find a way to fight through it.
It's also interesting to think, you know, as deep as the Cubs played into the season last year, you know, we really only saw like six games. Well, I guess really five games where Kyle Schwarber was in the starting lineup. So that's weird to think. They won 103 games. They won the World Series. And here's a guy who has left-handed power to hit as many as 40 home runs. And that's probably not – I mean, sure, that's not even the ceiling for a guy with the potential that he has. And now you bring him back into the mix, and, you know, he's just got cleared to catch, meaning everything is all good with his knee. He's out there, you know, ready to be their everyday left fielder, maybe even hit leadoff or anything else. But it's just fascinating to me that basically because of Kyle Schwarber, I actually believe that the Cubs may even be better in 2017 than 2016 when you add a guy and that dynamic presence into a lineup.
I mean, just having him around, just the thought of him being out there, I mean, he couldn't start in the three World Series games at home, but just the threat of, okay, I got Kyle Schwarber in my back pocket. If you want to start playing pitching matchup, I'll bring out Kyle. That is a huge weapon. And it's great to have him, and it's great that he's cleared. And just look at him as your third catcher. It gives Joe a little bit more flexibility throughout the game if he wants to pinch run for Montero, pinch run for Contreras. I'm assuming when he starts, he'll probably get at least the three at-bats, and maybe if you got the lead, you take him out for defense and sit on the bench. And just to have a third catcher is always a guy who can
– I mean, I'm always kind of concerned about his outfield defense.
Yeah.
With how big he is.
I think that was a little bit has been – too much has been made out of that.
Sure.
He had a couple bad plays in that series against the Mets in 2015. But really before that, I mean, he made a lot of pretty good plays. He made a nice running catch, you know, and hammered into the wall. I can't remember when. It was late in 2015. But I remember everybody was joking in the press box, like, is the wall okay?
Yeah.
And, like, after the game, Madden even made a joke about that. He's like, the wall's fine. Like, we checked with him, and we had PJ, Cubs trainer, like, go check it out. So there were, you know, there were all these jokes. But, like, Schwarber is that guy. He will run through the wall, and he works so damn hard that I believe that he, even though whatever shortcomings he has on defense, he's going to just continue to work at them and diminish it. And you know what? Like, he has a big body, but he's also not slow for a body type.
True.
You know,
no,
he was a former high school linebacker and a guy who is going to be
bases.
He's going to be in the leadoff. Is he going to steal bases?
But also, you look at the other two outfielders. I mean, you got Jason Hayward, who is Gold Glove caliber out there, and then center fielder John Jay and Al Mora, who are both really good defensively. They can cover a little bit more area in their thing and maybe shade it a little bit more. So maybe Kyle doesn't have to go all the way over to center field. You got guys who can cover a little bit of that zone and don't have to worry about just yell I got it and just be careful out there.
Tony, I want to talk about the unknowns heading into spring training, and I'm really curious to see what Hayward's going to do with his all the work he's put in with his swing. Madden the other day talked about seeing video of it. He hasn't seen him in person yet do it, but he's liked what he's seen as well. I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the table in these spring training startup games and see what kind of adjustments he's made.
I think he just needed to get away.
Reset button.
Just completely reset. It's compared to golf and when you've got the yips. Okay, you know what? Put the clubs in the bag for a while. Just go take a walk. Just do away, and then come back with a clear mind.
That first video that surfaced, it was like a month after, I think. It was around summertime,
and
everybody else is doing their vacations and stuff, and there he is working on his swing, which was, you know, for somebody that's making that much money, I'm sure fans see that, and it's like, okay, this guy's really doing what he has to do to get
better. He's not cashing a check,
I'll be there in spring training.
I when I first saw that video that you're talking about, Scotty, my first thought was kind of exactly what you were talking about, Jeff, with like, dude, put it away. Like, it's only been like a month, and you just played the longest season of your life, the longest season in Cubs franchise history. Like, I know it didn't go well, but just put it away and recharge mentally. And maybe he did. I don't know what he did, what took place over the 4 weeks, you know, from the end of the season until that. But, you know, I think that he could have used probably a little bit more time, I think, to, like, mentally reset. But either way, that's all that matters is, like, hit the reset button. He's going to go in to both spring training and the regular season with that 0.000 batting average. He's not going to be feeling, you know, a crisis of confidence that he was feeling for all of last year, because here's a guy who had, like, you know, a 350 on base, like a 290 average guy throughout his career, and he's hitting 230 and barely pushing 300 on base percentage. Yeah. Everything was just out of whack with him last year. He had to get away. I think just simply the fact of getting away before even making adjustments is the biggest deal. And then making adjustments, yeah, I mean, they have – the Cubs have a lot of confidence in their hitting coach, John Mailey, the Chicago guy, Eric Hinsky, who knew what Jason Hayward was like in his best seasons because they were teammates together in Atlanta. So I think that's another interesting wrinkle there as well. And then you have other guys like David Ross and whoever else around, you know, with the Cubs that can help focus on Hayward. So I think absolutely I'm expecting a much better year, maybe even if he doesn't get back to the same numbers.
Even if he hits 270,
that means he's in the field in the playoffs instead of on the bench.
Yes.
What the Cubs need.
And we saw his impact in the field, too, when I think it was game six, when the Indians were starting to come back after the Cubs had that big lead and they were hitting a couple balls hard. And then there's a line shot. I forget off the bat of who right now. But Hayward, it was kind of knuckling, and Hayward in right field where we were at in, like, the press box, it was a really, really tough catch, and he made it look easy, especially, I'm sure, to the TV cameras. But that was the type of play that most guys don't make. Honestly, it was the type of – it was a ball that would drop or eat somebody up, or, you know, may have just – it might have been more of a circus catch than what he did. And that right there, even though I don't believe he ended up getting a hit at all in game six or producing really offensively, that was it. And then, you know, hustling down the line. And, like, we saw that multiple times, you know, especially in that comeback against the Giants to really clinch everything in the NLDS. The way he hustles and all these little things that he does.
And he never hung his head.
Exactly.
No. He never hung his head, which is what you want. I always want a guy going up there who's, I mean, as bad as it was for going for another plate, he seemed like he had the mindset of, like, okay, this is the at-bat where it comes together. I'm going to get it in this time. And that's exactly what I want. I don't want a guy going up going, oh, God, don't throw me one. I don't want to hit another 4-3 ground out.
Well, hey, they start the season off in St. Louis, so that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, that'll do it for our Cubs Talk podcast this week. Find all our podcasts at csnchicago.com/podcasts. Subscribe to our iTunes channel from there. We're also available on Google Play, Stitcher, and Audioboom. You can follow at CSN Cubs where every episode is posted, along with all of your daily Cubs Talk news and stories.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.